Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canaan. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died Friday. We'll spend the hour taking your calls about your thoughts and how you think the country will or should proceed. My guest is an advocate for reproductive rights. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Today, I'm going to give preference to women callers, so we'll put you to the front of the queue if you're a woman and you want to share your thoughts about the life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, about what the future of the country holds. Late this morning, it was announced that the body of Justice Ginsburg will lie in repose at the Supreme Court on Wednesday and Thursday. Members of the public are invited to pay their respects outside. The U.S. Senate is returning to Washington, and everyone's watching what Republican Senators Mitt Romney of Utah and Chuck Grassley of Iowa will do. They're looking for clues about whether they will support any effort to approve a Supreme Court justice before November's election. President Trump says he will name a new nominee Friday or Saturday. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will move quickly to set up confirmation hearings and a vote to replace Ginsburg. Democrats oppose a Trump appointment so close to the election. So joining us on the phone today to talk about all of this is Amy Weintraub. She is Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. Thanks for coming back on WMNF Midpoint, Amy.
Oh my gosh, Sean. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, I'm really glad you could join us. It's a very important topic we're discussing today, and I think our listeners are going to be really interested in joining the conversation. What were your first reactions on Friday when you learned about the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
I was shocked, and I was just heartbroken, I got to tell you. For someone who I didn't know personally, her death hit me hard. I cried and I was upset. I felt sick. I just was in great mourning all Friday evening.
And you were part, I believe, of at least organizing a vigil in downtown St. Petersburg on Saturday night. What was the mood of that vigil?
Yeah, it was the whole vigil development was very interesting. On Friday night, I really, other than on social media posting and things like that and watching how other people were reacting, I did kind of feel I was alone in my grief, and I was mourning alone. And I went to bed and really sad. And when I woke up the next morning, I found messages from this group of USF students. They're not students I knew well, but they did work. They are very interested in reproductive rights, and they're people who care deeply about healthcare and about women's issues and things like that. They actually happen to also be the lead of the Generation Action Group at USF St. Pete, and they said they had already posted a Facebook event page with a few, you know, maybe a dozen people interested in attending this vigil at the courthouse in St. Pete, the judicial building in St. Pete. And so as soon as I saw that, I'm like, I want to help them. Because I have organized events and I have equipment and things like that. So I contacted them, and they were so excited that I was going to come on board because I could help them with logistics and so forth. Well, by the time the event started that evening at 8 p.m., literally hundreds of people were gathered in the darkness with their candles. It was truly a vigil. I feel like we did a very good job of paying tribute to Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her amazing legacy, lifting up all the ways that she moved the feminist movement, moved women's lives forward. And people, this was a large group of people, probably the first large group event that many people attending had been to since March. And everyone was so appropriate. They were as able to get as socially distanced from each other as they could. Every single person wore a mask the entire time. It was a very respectful and very sad event, but hopefully at the same time, we were able to talk about some actions that folks could take in moving forward. And so anyway, I was really delighted to be a part of it.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub. She's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida, and we're talking about the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, her legacy, and what's next for the country. If you'd like to join this conversation, the number to call in is 813-239-9663. Of course, you can also email dj@wmnf.org. If you text us, please sign your name, and the text number is 813-433-0885. It's 12:11 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. And so, Amy, Donald Trump today told Fox and Friends that he had a list of five finalists. He's already said that he's going to nominate a woman to be on the Supreme Court to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But there's five or maybe four finalists that he'll consider. He'll mention it. He'll say who that is on Friday or Saturday after the vigil for after the Ruth Bader Ginsburg lies in state. But he wants a confirmation vote before Election Day. Now, the Constitution doesn't address this. It doesn't say, well, there can't be a confirmation vote on an election year or anything like this. But you oppose having a vote on a Supreme Court nominee before Election Day. Why is that?
One of the reasons is that voting has already started. Voting has already started. Early voting has started in many states. And even here in Florida, our voters who are overseas have already received their ballots. And as you and I talked on, Floridians are voting. And so with an election already in process, it seems especially erroneous to proceed with something this profound that will have generational impact. I think that most Americans want the voters to decide the future of where our government's going and our judiciary. And actually, the latest polling shows that the majority of us really believe that this should wait, this important critical decision should wait until after the election, until after a new leader, or potentially not a new leader, but the presidency is decided.
And we will hear more about what Republicans and Democrats are saying about that later on in the show. We heard some of it last hour in Rob's show, but we'll hear more about that later. But right now I want to talk a little bit about who Trump might mention on Friday or Saturday. A front runner to fill the Supreme Court seat is a federal appellate judge who has established herself as a reliable conservative on hot button legal issues from abortion to gun control. Her name is Amy Coney Barrett, and she's hailed by religious conservatives and others on the right as an ideological heir to the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Liberals say Barrett's legal views are too influenced by her Catholic beliefs and fear that she could seek to scale back abortion rights. She's in her 40s. She's very young. What are your thoughts about Amy Coney Barrett?
Absolutely an extremist. Her religiosity informs her decisions. And we have not had that on the Supreme Court. In this, well, I suppose some people would say that we have had it, but is this extreme where someone is out front that their religious theology is going to guide them and has proven that has guided them over and over again? It absolutely is unacceptable.
And a listener just sent me this article, and it's from the UK, the Daily Mail. And the title is, Trump's female Supreme Court favorite belongs to a Christian group which helped inspire The Handmaid's Tale and tells her to submit to her husband, and members believe they healed a teen girl by laying on of hands. The group that this article is talking about is called People of Praise. And the article here says that she and much of her immediate family are members of this obscure Christian group whose practices are likely to be scrutinized. And it says that women should submit to their husbands, and it claims to have miraculously cured scoliosis through laying on of hands. Now, I have to say, I don't know that much about People of Praise. I'm just reading what it says here in this UK newspaper, the Daily Mail. But that's, you know, a group that helped inspire The Handmaid's Tale. Maybe for people who aren't familiar with The Handmaid's Tale, what does that mean to you when you hear that?
The Handmaid's Tale is a piece of dystopian fiction that looks at America that has been caught up and is now led by radical extreme religiosity that is entirely male dominated, where all women are in incredibly subservient positions no matter what their socioeconomic status. So, I mean, that is a very interesting comparison between the nominee and that dystopia. But the comparison I would like to make is between her and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I mean, we're talking about someone who, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is someone who worked her entire life, even before she was a Supreme Court justice, to make sure that women had equity in every place that they could, whether it's women being able to open a credit card account in their own name and develop their own credit history, or to lease an apartment on their own without their father or their brother or their husband co-signing, by being able to buy property, being able to get medical treatment without your husband's buy-in, being able to play sports in school the way that boys could. I mean, all of those things were things that Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg worked so hard on and got for us. And now to imagine that she's going to be replaced by someone who potentially, from what this article you read, is subscribing to something that is absolutely oppositional. I mean, if that's not enough to, you know, to take your breath, I don't know what is. But this is really unacceptable.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub. She's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. And this hour we're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice who passed away on Friday, and how the country may proceed going forward. And I really would like to involve our audience in this discussion. What are your memories of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and how do you think the country will go forward? The number here is 813-239-9663. I will give preference to women, so let the call answerer know, and I will put you right up to the front of the queue. You can email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. This is Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. Well, we were just talking about a potential pick that might replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and that's Amy Coney Barrett. But another person that Donald Trump has mentioned as being on his shortlist finalist is Barbara Lagoa. And she is a former Florida Supreme Court justice, and if you blinked, you may not have realized that. She was actually appointed to the Florida Supreme Court by Governor Ron DeSantis, who has been in office for only a year and 10 months or something. And she then left the Florida Supreme Court because she became a federal judge. She recently ruled with a 6-4 majority on the Florida felon and fees issue that we've talked a lot about here, the Amendment 4 instituting language. She's a member of the Federalist Society. What do we know about Barbara Lagoa?
We know a lot less than we do about the other nominees, because her time on the bench has been so much shorter, and we don't have as many decisions that we can get evidence from of how she might perform on the Supreme Court. I'm sure that there are people who think that politically it would be a smart move, because it would, there are Floridians who would potentially get very excited about a Floridian being nominated, and that might mobilize Republicans to get out the vote and, you know, heighten Trump's presence in our state. But again, I mean, you know, it's difficult for me to imagine someone who's part of the Federalist Society replacing in any way the spirit of movement, the spirit of equity, the spirit of justice that Ruth Bader Ginsburg brought to the Supreme Court. It makes me anxious.
And Amy, I want to get to our calls and the emails that are coming in, but I do want to follow up on something you just said. And that's the Federalist Society. You're not necessarily a lawyer. You might not have this information at your fingertips, but you might be able to give us a broad answer to this question. my impression is that the Federalist Society is a very small percentage of all the attorneys in the country, yet almost all of the federal judges that are being appointed by Donald Trump and quite a few of the Supreme Court people, justices on the Supreme Court, are members of this relatively small society, the Federalist Society. Are we talking about a fringe philosophy here in law that is disproportionately represented in very high lifetime appointments to the court?
I'm not sure how you get to join the Federalist Society. It seems that it's prominent conservative people who are very interested in, at least in theory, of smaller government. I understand that it does have about 60,000 people in it. I mean, you don't have to be a lawyer to be in the Federalist Society. You can be a law student, and I think even individuals can join. Clearly, it is a recruiting ground or maybe even training ground for people who are interested in the federal bench.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub, and she's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. You're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:22 in the afternoon, and we're going to go to the phone calls in just a second. I'll give out the number again if you'd like to call in, 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org. DeMarco writes a long email. I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing, but he starts out by saying, Moscow Mitch refused our first black president his rightful SCOTUS pick for over a year. If he flip-flops on letting Twitter nominate another justice, Twitler, I think he's referring to President Trump there, nominate another justice this close to an election, hopefully it will mean women will toss out 45 in a landslide. Women's rights are on the line. So that's part of what DeMarco writes. So thank you for that email. I'll read some more emails in a little bit. But I also want to go to the phones because Terry in St. Petersburg has been holding a while. Welcome to the show, Terry. What would you like to say? Terry, are you there? We'll put Terry on hold. Let me read another email while we wait.
Hello,
for Terry.
Can you hear me?
Oh, hi, is this Terry? Terry, can
Hello?
You hear me?
Can you hear
You're
me?
You're on the air.
Wonderful. I, too, was devastated on Friday. I cried all night. But I want to make sure that everybody knows women's rights and reproductive rights are definitely at stake, but that is not all that's in stake here. The Republicans have had a plan to remake the federal judiciary and thereby remake the country for decades. And they have diligently worked without stopping to that end. That's part of what the Federalist Society is all about. It started, I believe, in the early 80s. They want to get conservative judges in there. What they want to do is they want to get rid of the New Deal, which they've always hated. And they want to get rid of what's left of the Great Society. They want to get rid of most federal social safety net programs, and they want to get rid of federal regulations. So they want to take the court back to the pre-FDR era of cases like Lochner, which invalidated a lot of all of FDR's New Deal programs. And they want a conservative judiciary that's going to overturn federal regulations. A lot of the civil rights laws we use the Commerce Clause to pass. Said, well, if a restaurant takes things that move in interstate commerce, and therefore we can regulate and reduce discrimination, they think that's an illegitimate way to legislate. They want to get rid of all of it. So everything is up for grabs. Everything is at stake. This loss of Ruth Bader Ginsburg is incalculable. And I wish that Democratic voters years and years ago had understood how important the court was. It's not been a motivating factor for Democrats. It's been a motivating factor for Republicans, primarily because they've used abortion to hook the evangelicals into their project and keep them loyal voters for a conservative court.
Amy
Weintraub, Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. Thanks so much for calling in. Terry from St. Petersburg. We're going to go back to the phones in a little bit. So if you're on the line, just hang on, please. But I want to read a couple of emails that came in. Clark writes, this is Kim O'Connor, who is a write-in candidate for Florida Congressional District 2, says, so sad seeing a repeat of Bush 41 replacing Lyon Thurgood Marshall with Cody Clarence Thomas. I say there's a strong chance Trump will find an African-American judge to preempt Jim Clyburn's endorsement of Biden, asking Joe to appoint an African-American woman to the court. So that's the opinion of Kim O'Connor, who's an NPA write-in candidate in Florida Congressional District 2. And also Tony writes, I wish you wouldn't refer to Trump's Supreme Court possibilities as conservative. And the reason Tony says that is because Roe v. Wade is a long-held precedent. That is conservative in the true sense. These women are hardly conservatives. They're extremist right-wing theocratic ideologues. That's the opinion of Tony B. in St. Petersburg. If you'd like to write in, the email is dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. If you'd like to join us by phone, you can call us at 813-239-9663. And I'm going to give preference to women this hour. And our guest again is Amy Weintraub. She's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. I want to play a little bit of sound from yesterday. Yesterday, about 100 protesters gathered in front of Palmacia Country Club in South Tampa. They expected to see Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. They opposed McConnell's plan to push through the Senate a vote on Trump's Supreme Court nominee to replace Justice Ginsburg. And WMNF's Blanny Whalen asked Taylor Hanaway why she was protesting.
I'm here to stand up for our rights, to stand up for the crap that's going on, that's going to try to be pulled before election. And finding out that Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away was really just, it made me sad, but it made me scared. And that is not how it should be. And I know that he's going to play a part in what's going to happen.
If you could talk to our senators here in Florida, Senator Scott and Senator Rubio, what would you say to them?
Think about the people and not themselves.
Well, that was Taylor Hanaway, and she was at a protest yesterday in Tampa, and we're going to hear another sound from that protest in just a second. So thanks to Blanny Whalen for that interview. Here is protester Jen McDonald also answering that same question about the Senate senators.
What would you say to our senators, Senator Scott and Senator Rubio?
I hope you guys will uphold the standard that you set in 2016, that we must wait until the next president is seated until we move forward with a new Supreme Court nominee. I believe Rubio was the one that would be quoted as saying that that he would have done this, whether it was a Democrat or a Republican in 2016, that he would have forced us to wait. So now we're going to hold his hand to that standard that he set in 2016. I ask that they look at what they said before and then move forward with justice.
Well, that's Jen McDonald. She was protesting in Tampa yesterday. Really, people seem to be really upset that the Republican Senate, might go put through a nominee this term before the presidential election, or at least before January. So, Amy, what do you think, especially about our Florida senators? Do you think that there's a possibility that either of our Florida senators would, you know, see the light maybe and see things your way and wait until January?
I really don't have any hope of that. I feel that they are in Trump's pocket, and I do not see any hope that we will be able to persuade them. I would love for us to be able to, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't try calling and all of that, but you know, they've shown over and over again that they are not interested in what the people want. There, you know, we know that over 70% of Floridians, just as an example, believe Roe v. Wade should stay the law of the land. They're not interested in hearing about that. They have an agenda, and they pretty much stick to it.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub. She is Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. And if you'd like to join this conversation, here's the number, 813-239-9663. You're listening to Midpoint Monday. We're talking about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and how you think the country will proceed. Let's take a phone call right now. We're going to go to Rob in Thanota-Sassa. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how are you? I wanted to make a quick comment about many of the over the past several months leading up to this election now, I've heard a lot of listeners say they won't vote for Joe Biden. And I know from experience, before the election that elected Trump, many people, Democrats or progressives, were angry about the Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton thing. They were, well, I'm not going to vote for Hillary. Well, as I stressed then, as I'd like to stress now, here's what happens when you take your ball and go home, you know, and you don't participate. We got Trump as president, and now there's potentially three justices if this goes through. And imagine the difference in the country had all of those Bernie supporters voted for Hillary. I'm not saying for sure that she would have won, but it would have certainly helped, and it's been a very close election. So here's what you're going to get, potentially three Supreme Court justices in for life as a result of people, you know, not understanding that in a democracy, it's great to fight for your ideals, but when that candidate doesn't make it, you have to close ranks. That's something the Republicans do extremely well, and something Democrats have not done. And I think it has cost them elections.
All right. Rob, thank you so much for that.
Thank you for that. Those thoughts. If you disagree with Rob, or if you agree, or if you are one of the voters he's talking about, give us a call, 813-239-9663. Amy, so I don't know it's how useful it is to go back and relitigate or re-vote the 2016 election, but what would you take from what Rob was saying, and how would you apply that moving forward?
I am so sorry, but I could not hear anything he said.
Okay. He was saying that essentially, you know, when people who didn't vote for Hillary Clinton didn't vote for Hillary Clinton, that it gets that it's a problem, that's why we got three or potentially three Supreme Court justices. So how would you make that applicable to this year's election?
Yeah, I mean, it's critical, obviously, especially in a state like Florida where we're a swing state. It's critical that if you care about the makeup of our court, not just with this particular seat, but every seat going forward that's going to need to be filled, you need to make your voice heard by getting to the polling place or voting by mail. I mean, absolutely. Courts matter. Your vote matters, and your vote is what determines who gets seated.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub. She's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. I'm going to read an email or two. And this is a email that comes from Mary. She says, "It's a crying shame. We as a nation are not allowed the time to grieve this remarkable woman who used her voice to speak for so many of us before all this." She uses a word that I'm not going to read on the air, political infighting, and that's Mary from Memphis. So thank you so much for the email, Mary from Memphis. And if you'd like to call in, you can call 813-239-9663. I will give preference to women callers this hour. And you can email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. So I'm going to move back to talking about the potential for a vote that might be coming up. On Saturday, Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins said the vacancy should be filled by the winner of the presidential election. Alaska Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski also said over the weekend she opposes filling Ginsburg's seats before the election. If two more Republicans feel the same way, it might make for a tight vote, but if fewer than two do, then if only one does, for example, perhaps Mitt Romney, who voted to impeach the president, who voted to convict the president during impeachment on one of the charges, then it would be a tie, in which case Mike Pence would be the tiebreaker vote. So, Amy, what are your thoughts about whether there are some more Republicans out there who may vote to wait till after the election?
Yeah, I'm sure that many of them feel that way, but they're not actually saying that if the vote comes to the floor that they're going to vote in opposition to make the case. I am very, very nervous that they're saying that they think it shouldn't come to the floor, but they're not saying that if it does, I will vote no. And so all this posturing, you know, it's not anything that we can really count on in the end, in my view. So there we do need those senators who may be persuadable. We absolutely need to reach out to them. We should all be lighting up the congressional switchboard right now with calls, trying to persuade them to continue opposing bringing a nominee forward, and if there is such a vote, that they vote no.
All right, well, we're going to go back to the phones in just a minute or two. Will has been holding for a while, and we will get to him in just shortly. But I want to remind people that our guest is Amy Weintraub, Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. But let's listen to what Mitch McConnell said in 2016. Senator Mitch McConnell refused to consider President Obama's nominee, and this was months before the election, much earlier than September. And McConnell prevented the vote on Judge Merrick Garland. Here's what Mitch McConnell said in 2016.
Mr. President, the next justice could fundamentally alter the direction of the Supreme Court and have a profound impact on our country. So, of course, the American people should have a say in the court's direction. It is a president's constitutional right to nominate a Supreme Court justice, and it is the Senate's constitutional right to act as a check on a president and withhold its consent. As Chairman Grassley and I declared weeks ago and reiterated personally to President Obama, the Senate will continue to observe the Biden rule so that the American people have a voice in this momentous decision. The American people may well elect a president who decides to nominate Judge Garland for Senate consideration. The next president may also nominate somebody very different. Either way, our view is this: give the people a voice in filling this vacancy.
All right, well, that was Senator Mitch McConnell speaking 4 years ago, and he's singing a completely different tune this year, and I want to know what your thoughts are about that. The number to call in is 813-239-9663. You can also text us at 813-433-0885. And you can email DJ at WMNF.org. Chris in Tampa writes, humans don't have the right to use another human's body for any reason, even sustaining life. The courts know this. So that's a text we got from Chris. Also, David writes, Trump will pick Amy Coney Barrett because she's an attractive woman. That's David's opinion out there. We're going to go back to you, Amy, in just a little bit. But let's hear who was on the line? I forgot now. Will in Tampa. Welcome to the show, Will. Okay, we don't have Will. I just found out. So let me play another audio tape from Lindsey Graham. And Graham is the chair of the Judiciary Committee, and that will vet Trump's pick to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg and manage the spectacle of televised hearings on the nomination. Here's what Lindsey Graham said in 2016.
If an opening comes in the last year of President Trump's term and the primary process has started, we'll wait to the next election. And I've got a pretty good chance of being the judiciary.
You're on the record.
Yeah.
All right.
Hold the tape.
Hold the tape. Well, we held the tape, and that's what Lindsey Graham said in 2016. That was what he just said in 2018. That was just 2 years ago. He had talked about this as well, but now he's singing a different tune. Senator Graham has apparently lost the tape and changed his mind. On Saturday, he said the rules have changed as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, I guess I don't want to be too cynical, but not everyone's very surprised that Lindsey Graham might change his mind. But what's up with that, Amy?
Oh my gosh, it is crazy. I mean, it is so infuriating that they can just, like, on such an important, critical issue that they really stood firm on for almost a year, well before the election had actually started, in 2016. And now that they have flipped so dramatically when it's in their favor, when the potential outcome's in their favor. I mean, it is maddening. And it's hard, really, really hard to understand. I mean, these are our nation's leaders, and they are not standing by their word. It makes you question a lot, or at least it makes me question a lot about their judgment and about where, you know, what's their end game? I mean, their end game is power. It's not about justice. It's not about truth.
And one thing we should say about Lindsey Graham is that he is in a race for his Senate seat. The Democratic Senate candidate Jamie Harrison is running close to Graham, according to one recent poll. That's despite the conservative tilt of South Carolina. And Jamie Harrison is matching the three-term incumbent in fundraising that has yielded a total of more than $30 million for each of the candidates. I'm reading from the AP here. Harrison hopes to use the shifting Supreme Court stance against Graham as he does a pro-Harrison political action committee, which is buying $1 million, aimed to use Graham's own 2018 pledge to oppose future election year confirmations on the court. So, Lindsey Graham's got his own stuff going on with his reelection, and he's going to get hammered on that by his opponents. You know, I'm just trying to figure out what's going to give here? Is there going to be a really quick vote, and even before the election? Well, actually, as you pointed out earlier correctly, the election has already started, but before Election Day. And I believe you're a Democrat. How will your party take that if that actually happens?
Well, there are things that the Democrats in Congress can do to, you know, to protest or to dissent. I mean, there are radical things that they could do. And I don't know if they're up for it. I don't know if they will even go down that road. But, you know, they can not approve the government funding resolution and shut down the government. Schumer has all kinds of tactics at his disposal to stall Senate business. What will they do? That is that a good idea? Hard to say. But I'm certain the Democratic leadership won't take this lying down. It is going to be interesting to see how. I mean, typically these hearings for Supreme Court justices take months. You know, the vetting that has to happen and so forth. It's going to be interesting to see how they could possibly speed it up so quickly for it to happen in the next month.
Do you think that the balance of the Senate could tip in November?
I do, of course. Of course I do. There are enough hot seats right now with people like in South Carolina, like in Maine, where the opposition, the Democratic congressional candidates or the senatorial candidates are getting a lot of money and they're getting a lot of attention. They have momentum within their state. For sure there could be a balance shift. And so that's part of the emergency, right, on the Republican Senate leadership side.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub. She's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida, and you're listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:44 in the afternoon. We're going to go now to hear Fran in Largo. Fran, what are your memories of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, or how do you think the country should respond?
Can you hear me?
I can, Fran. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. I'm just very saddened by her passing, and I'm really not surprised at all by how the Republicans are making their plans. But I just had a question when you mentioned the Federalist Society. Was that something that was backed and started maybe by the Koch brothers? That's what I wanted to know. I'll get off, and you can answer my question.
All right, Fran, I was trying to Google it or whatever. I don't know how it was started. That's not something I know.
It really was launched and grew during the Reagan administration, and it seems like it did start by a group of law students at some of the elite law schools who were conservative and libertarian, and and who wanted to ascend to more power. And so they didn't see these kind of ideals reflected in the curriculum at their law school, so they had this motivation to start an organization on their own. That's what I'm seeing, you know, in my quick research.
And it was started in 82, so midway through President Reagan's first term. Chief Justice John Roberts, former Chief Justice or Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh. So it's a who's who from the recent Supreme Court history, former Attorney General Ashcroft. But it is a relatively recent phenomenon since the Reagan administration. But I haven't been able to find the Koch's connection yet. Apologize to you, Fran. That was a good question that I just don't know the answer to. Maybe somebody out there does know. We're talking about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the history of her and the future of the Supreme Court, the future of the country after Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And I'd like to involve our audience in this discussion. What are your memories and how do you think the country should proceed? Give us a call, 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. Let me read a couple of the tributes from pretty famous people who have weighed in on Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Her opinion. This is President Donald Trump, says her opinions, including well-known decisions regarding the legal equality of women and the disabled, have inspired all Americans and generations of great legal minds. Former President Barack Obama says Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg fought to the end through her cancer with unwavering faith in our democracy and its ideals. That's how we should remember her. But she also left instructions for how she wanted her legacy to be honored. And in that, I think President Obama is talking about her telling her daughter that she wanted the next president, the president who's elected in November, to pick her successor. We can go now to Greg in Clearwater. Hi, Greg. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Thanks again for running a great show. And it's a shame that we all have to feel the way we do right now. But, you know, Mitch McConnell is the most dangerous man in government. For 11 and a half years, he's been the most obstructionist person up there. And I just cannot believe that the Democrats are going to go to a gunfight with a plastic spoon again. And people need to get on the phone and start calling everybody that they can and demand that whatever it takes, even if they do have to shut government down, we must hold their feet to the fire, especially because we have Ginsburg's own request that she would be replaced by the next president. Trump wins, and then he can go ahead and do what he wants to do. But I just find it so deplorable that you hear all these Republicans, what they said in 2016 about Merrick Garland, and now to have them just kind of flip over because it's convenient and because they have the power, it makes me sick.
All right, Greg, thanks so much. I appreciate that call. I don't know if you heard that. Were you able to hear that?
I could not. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, he's saying he's sick about the situation. Our guest is Amy Weintraub, Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. I want to read something that Alan Alda, actor, wrote this morning on Twitter. He said, in the 70s, I wrote a piece for Ms. Magazine on why men should support the ERA. A law professor fact-checked it and said, whoever wrote this seems to know nothing about constitutional law. So instead, I interviewed her. She was brilliant and kind. She was Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So that's something that actor Alan Alda wrote on Twitter today. Let's talk a little bit about some of the cases that she was instrumental in either dissenting on or she was in the majority on. When you think of Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legacy, I know that you probably are thinking of some things where she upheld the right of women to choose, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. What are some of the things that you would remember of her decisions?
Well, one of the most exciting things that techniques that she used was when she was arguing that gender discrimination does exist. Because remember, she had a hard time convincing the Supreme Court that it was even an issue. These were older white gentlemen who just they'd never been discriminated against, and they were blind to it. And so for her to make her case, the act about the need for spouses, no matter, regardless of their sex, that they should be able to collect benefits. She used an example of a husband who was not able, after his spouse died, his wife died, he was not able to collect on her earnings. And that was, you know, that was something that woke those men on the Supreme Court up to the situation. So that's one of, you know, that was one of her first, I think it was her first case before the Supreme Court when she was representing the American Civil Liberties Union, and she was able to prove the case.
Our guest is Amy Weintraub, and she is with Progress Florida. She's the Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida, and I'm Sean Canaan, and this is WMNF Tampa. And thanks to Rob for sending me this information about more about the Federalist Society. Many of Trump's judicial nominees are members of the Federalist Society, including Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch, who reportedly was selected for the seat by Leo, who is friends with David and Charles Koch, and they've both donated generously to his organization. That's from a Salon.com article, so thank you for that connection to the Kochs, who do fund the Federalist Society. Thank you. Appreciate you sending me that, Rob. This is an email that comes in from Tom, and Tom writes, "The hypocrisy is vast. Obama was a two-term winner of the popular vote, and Trump lost the popular vote by 3 million. That's from Tom out there in cyberspace. Mm-hmm. So, and I want to read this short, very short tribute that came in from former Justice David Souter. He served from 1990 until 2009 on the court, and he said, "Ruth Ginsburg was one of the members of the court who achieved greatness before she became a great justice. I loved her to pieces." So that's from Justice Souter, former Justice Souter. We heard on Democracy Now! About two times that she sided with conservatives. One was to approve a natural gas pipeline, and another was to support deportation of people who are seeking asylum. But she also dissented on one major recent case, and that was when the Voting Rights Act was partially dismantled. A large section of the Voting Rights Act was taken out, and she wrote a strong dissent. Is that something that, Amy, you could comment on?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the most inspirational dissents that I've ever seen. I'm not a lawyer myself, but it's always exciting to see a well-spoken, well-regarded, enthusiastic person about civil rights state their case so clearly as she did there. I believe that she talked expansively about how removing the heart of the Voting Rights Act is a attack on democracy itself. I mean, and anytime we're disenfranchising voters, of course that's the case. And so, yeah, it was an inspirational dissent, no doubt.
Well, Amy, I'm going to actually let you go so that we can take callers. We're having some phone issues, and I think it'll work better without a phone guest. I apologize for saying, but I'm really glad that you joined us this hour. And I want to ask you if you have any last thoughts that you'd like to leave us with about late Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The one thing, I mean, she did very, very much influence me as a young professional, reading about her, knowing about her as someone who studied political science in college. And I really centered my social justice work on reproductive rights and women's rights because of her and other icons. And, you know, I knew the world wasn't fair, but I also knew that people like her, unlike the heroes, that there was hope. Always there's hope. And so, you know, I loved her so much, and I'm full of regret that she passed. And it is infuriating, like Mary, an earlier caller, said, it is infuriating that we can't take the time to properly honor her before we have to start defending it. But we must, and we will.
Well, Amy Weintraub, thank you so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint Monday. Amy is Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and take care. And we're going to go to the phone lines now. I do want to hear what you have to say about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and where you think the country is heading. Here's the phone number, 813-239-9663. Do you have a favorite memory? You can email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. It's 12:55 in the afternoon. And we'll go now to Paul in Valrico. Welcome to the show, Paul. What would you like to say?
Hey, I just... regarding the Federalist Society, it actually has its ideological roots, if people want to Google it, in the John Birch Society. And they actually ran a candidate in 64 against Johnson. It was Barry Goldwater. But they were virulent anti-communists and extreme right-wingists that... people should check that out, the John Birch Society. That's where a lot of this fringe right is really ideologically rooted in.
And just to be clear, the Federalist Society came about after that, but you're referring to what happened with the John Birch Society, which is ideologically...
in the 50s, right, back in the 50s. But that's the home base for a lot of this stuff.
Appreciate it, Paul. Thanks so much for that. Those thoughts.
Okay.
And I want to read an email. Thank you. I want to read an email from Lou in Plant City, who says, Cittolini, the court jester, dances while Moscow Mitch pushes the federal judicial and now Supreme Court appointees through Wake Up America. That's a note from Lou in Plant City. So thank you for that, Lou. I think we have John in Tampa on the line. Hi, John.
I want to say is that, you know, we elected Trump, and that was one of the main reasons that we do the Supreme Court. And the chance he got to change three judges, he needs to take it quickly. That's why we voted for him in, because if we keep getting leftists, then this country's finished.
And the Constitution says whoever's president gets to select who the nominee is for the Supreme Court.
Right.
That's your point, right? But I think
you know, the Obama was going the wrong direction with the Supreme Court, and now we got a chance to change it.
Wait a second. You said that the president gets to select who should be on the Supreme Court, and I think people's issue is that 4 years ago that Obama did nominate someone and that he never got a hearing for that justice, even though the president was nominating someone. I think that's what the concern is. Your thoughts about that?
No, the concern is the Republicans had the Senate, okay? And Obama picked up a left-wing judge. So the Senate, which is all Republican like this now, needed to change the way the court was going. Now we got a chance to make it 6-3, which will hopefully straighten out the country a little bit more and keep getting some of this wrong decision, like abortion, gun rights, in that way. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I got it, John. I appreciate your call. I'm not sure if there are a lot of limits on gun rights that are being, cut down by the Supreme Court.
Well, right now, no. But in a year or two, if Bob wins, then we're going to have to fight for our rights for a gun. So you need to be touched now.
All right, John, I'm going to move on and see if people agree with you. Thank you for that call. I'm glad you called in. Eddie, thank you for calling in. What would you like to say, Eddie?
First, I'd like to thank you for taking my call. Also, I'd like to give my condolences to Ruth Ginsburg's family. And I'd just like to say how hypocritical the Republican Senate is. And they so openly do it now that they don't even try to hide it. They say one thing one minute when it suits them, and the next minute they flip. And it's just sad how openly they just show how hypocritical they are.
You know, our last caller, John, had said that, well, the president gets to pick who is the nominee, and then he later said, well, but the Senate was controlled by Republicans. But I didn't hear Mitch McConnell saying that in 2016, hey, we're in control of the Senate, so we get to decide. He said there's a legitimate reason we shouldn't do it, but now he's not saying that. It just seems like they're changing the rules of the game, and I think that's what people are upset about. So I appreciate
just like
calling.
The last caller also did.
All right.
He flipped also.
All right, Eddie, thanks so much for calling in, and I appreciate everyone who did call in. Thanks for bearing with us during our tech problems. And I really want to thank Amy Weintraub, who was our guest for the hour, or 90% of the hour. She's Reproductive Rights Program Director with Progress Florida. And I want to thank Rob Lori, DT, and Frank Knox. I'm Sean Canan. Tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Uro, will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned right now for Latino 54. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening to WMNF's Midpoint Monday.